Chapter 12. A miracle of sorts arrived on the president's desk shortly after his meeting with Sandecker. It was another letter from the Canadian Prime Minister, offering a potential solution to the growing crisis. A major natural gas field had quietly been discovered last year, the Prime Minister wrote, in a remote section of the Canadian Arctic. Preliminary explorations indicated that the site, located in Viscount Melville Sound, could prove to be one of the richest reserves of natural gas in the world. The privately held firm that made the discovery already had a fleet of tanker ships online to transport the gas to America. It was just the tonic the president was seeking to help boost his broader objectives. A major purchase agreement was quickly put in place to get the gas flowing. The market price was exceeded, the company promised to provide all the gas it could deliver. Or so guaranteed the CEO of the private exploration firm, one Mitchell Goyette. Ignoring the pleas from his economic and political advisors that he was being too brash, the president quickly acted on the news. In a nationally televised address from the Oval Office, he outlined his ambitious plans to the public. "My fellow Americans, we are living in a moment of great peril," he said into the cameras, his normally upbeat mood masked by solemnity. "Our daily lives are imperiled by a crisis of energy, while our very future existence is threatened by a crisis of the environment. Our dependency on foreign oil has created damaging economic consequences that we all feel, while promoting the emission of dangerous greenhouse gases. Troubling new evidence continues to show that we are losing the battle against global warming. For our own security and for the safety of the entire world, I am hereby directing that the United States achieve a national goal of carbon neutrality by the year 2020. While some may call this objective drastic or even impossible to attain, we have no other choice. I call tonight for a crash research effort by private industry, academic institutions, and our own government agencies to solve our energy needs through alternative fuels and renewable sources. Oil cannot and will not be the fuel that powers our future economy. A funding package will be presented to Congress shortly, outlining our specific investments in new research and technology. With the proper resources and a determined will, I am confident that we can reach this goal together. Nevertheless, we must make sacrifices today to cut our emissions and reduce our reliance on oil, which continues to choke our economy. Due to the recent availability of natural gas supplies, I am directing that all of our domestic coal and oil-fired power plants be converted to natural gas within 2 years. I am pleased to announce tonight that President Zhen of China has agreed to impose similar mandates in his country. In addition, I will be presenting plans shortly for our nation's automakers to accelerate the production of natural gas and hybrid electric-powered vehicles, which I hope will be adopted at the international level. We are facing difficult times, but with your support, we can reach a more secure tomorrow. Thank you. As the cameras turned off, the president's chief of staff, a short, balding man named Charles Meade, approached Ward. "Excellent job, sir. I believe it was an effective speech, and it ought to pacify the anti-coal fanatics and their proposed boycott." "Thanks, Charlie. I believe you were right," the president said. "It was quite effective. Effective, that is, at eliminating any chance at my being reelected," he added with a twisted grin.